Hi there, this is Laurieette Shoes of Four Leg Rehab Incorporated, your place for online canine rehab education. So, in today's audio, and actually this one, I looked it up, it's like, oh boy, we are on part 21 of business and marketing. It's been a while since I've done an audio. So, this one is inspired by some of the lectures I've been giving to local dog groups around here. And I thought it would be useful for you guys to do one on how to public speak, how to do presentations and that. So first off, if we go, why should you be learning to public speak and do talks and seminars and classes and presentations, etc.? This almost follows up from the blog I did a little while ago, and if you're listening to this later on, it was called the blog was called The Gifts You Have to Give, and I was basically talking about doing talks, and because this past week I had done a talk to the Alberta Dash and Rescue Club, and then one to the Calgary Dog Fanciers Club, and both were invitations to talk, and of course it's like, well, I'd be stupid to say no. Basically, they've asked me. They're my target audience for potential clients, so it was great. And in part, well, both of them, I'll just let you know, both of them were really, really well received. I was super happy with the feedback. Everybody was happy. I had tons of people come up to me afterwards and thank me and say how good it was, which is awesome. But it's also one of those that I have started to notice, both when I'm teaching, you know, regularly, and the dog owners, dog handlers are in the room, how much they are interested in the lectures as well. And it started me to think and to notice, you know, we have so much information to give. And all we have to do is put some of our knowledge into layperson terms, if we're lecturing to dog owners. And they are just eating this up. They love to get information from us. So it's a wonderful way to then build your customer base, increase your client base, and or to give back to your current customer and client base. Anyways, it's a wonderful thing to do. So the other thing is, what makes me an expert, or rather, how is it that I think I'm qualified to teach you about public speaking? And a couple things there. So I went through, from 10-year-old to 18-year-old, went through 4-H public speaking. And in my opinion, I think that is one of the best things that 4-H teaches kids, is the public speaking. And as awful as it may have seemed, it was like, I think I benefit so much from the public speaking aspect of it, more so than leading a 4-H calf around. Absolutely, the public speaking was foundational. And then beyond that, I mean, I've been teaching since 1999, teaching courses in canine rehabilitation and physiotherapy. So I do a lot of teaching. I do a lot of lecturing. And so what I thought is, I would combine some of what, oh, and then beyond that, I used to then, after I finished 4-H public speaking and was a leader of the local 4-H club, of course, I got stuck with the job of teaching the kids how to do public speaking. So in that, came up with a way of kind of teaching the kids all the things they need to be aware of for public speaking. So that's why I'm talking to you about this today. Alrighty, what else to tell you? Okay, let's start off with down to some of the nitty-gritty stuff now. So first off, let's think about topics that you can cover. And I put some of these in that blog, but I'm just going to cover them again. And two, thinking about what you can lecture about to dog owners and or the different types of dog owners. And really, there's so many things, like your sporting dog groups, your kennel clubs, working dog groups, rescue groups, different breed specific groups. So some of the things you could look at talking about would things be things like senior dog issues and how rehabilitation can help, intervertebral disc disease for your little chondrodystrophic breed clubs, stretching the canine athlete, conditioning the canine athlete, or break it down further, something like building strong shoulders for the canine athlete, or a preventative program for iliopsoas strains or cruciate tears, conditioning the canine handler. So this would be a great one, a niche for physical therapists, because, you know, it's what we do. We look at helping people and knowing then what they have to do as they're running around a course, and they need to have stable ankles and strong knees and good glutes. And so coming up with some programs for handlers would be good too. Warding off osteoarthritis. How to assess your dog for signs of joint or muscle pain. So like teaching owners where to look, how to check. Growing a strong puppy. So coordination and strength training and the importance of well puppy checkups. Things like back end awareness, which is good for any dog, but especially for giant breeds in through here. So those were a bunch of things I came up with just kind of thinking about it for less than 5 minutes. And I'm sure you guys can think of more and really just kind of pay attention to what your clients are telling you when they come in, things that they're worried about or their friends are talking about. Look on some of the Facebook groups, you know, things that, you know, dog owners, breeders, all of those that are talking about. I just recently, I did an intervertebral disc disease one to the Daxi Club, to the Daxi Rescue Group, and they just loved that. They remarked about how excited they were that I had broken it down into terms that they could understand, so they could fully see, you know, what was going on, even looking at neuroanatomy and the spinal cord and why a small disc herniation only causes some proprioceptive deficits, whereas what it means if they're lacking deep pain, things that you take for granted that you know, but that these different clubs are so interested in. The one I did for the Calgary Dog Fanciers, I started off with puppy stuff, so preventing hip dysplasia and things that are out there in the research, and stuff that if you're a four-leg member, I've got the presentations on preventing hip dysplasia as some of the training videos. And then I talked about top-line issues and some top-line issues that could be caused from back pain. What else? The back pain. I had a dog that I could show as a case that was we did a diaphragm release on him and it was like whoosh and was immediate. His back was, he no longer had a little tip or a little tiny roach at this one spot. So they loved that. I talked about how we do puppy assessments and what we find in these puppies. I talked about poor movement and things that, you know, pacing and how pacing might mean that there's some back pain as well. Sloppy or poor movements. So I talked about motor control and timing, timing with that and abdominal strengthening. Anyways, they lapped it up and talked about the stuff then that my clinic can do, talked about stuff that they can do at home. And then the question and answer session, they had tons of questions. And they brought three dogs that I could kind of go through and show them things that they can look at in their own dogs. So anyways, it was phenomenal. And I would be surprised if I didn't convert every single one of them into being potential clients at the clinic, because like I said, I don't think anybody was sitting there looking deadpan or angry. I don't think a single group or person, I think every single person asked me a question about something. And that, to me, is very engaging. Anyways, I'm getting off topic. I'm getting super excited. So those are topics you can cover for dog owners. And I've already talked about in previous ones things about vets and lectures you can give to vets. About the things that you can do, treatment for vestibular disease, post-operative things. And again, I'll talk more about this, is telling your vets, here are some things that you can do. I think I called it the law of reciprocity, something like that. One of these, there's in one of your business and marketing's audios, I talk about that more specifically towards vets. So this one I'm going to actually, this talk, I'm going to target more to how to public speak, but then really tailoring it to your dog owners. Okay. Whew. That was the topics I can cover. Alrighty, so next, you've decided what you're going to do. Now, go out and do your homework. So, go on to PubMed or Google Scholar and look up some research. Share so that you can share some studies with them about whatever the topic is that you want to talk about. What I have found is that owners love when you can tell them, here's what research is saying, but you can break it down for them so that it's in layperson language, owner-friendly language, and interpret the different things. So if you are, you know, it's all medical gobbledygook jargon, right? Break it down so that it is understandable to the dog owner. They love that stuff. Okay, so you've done your homework, you look at what's out there in the literature, and then really, you're going to kind of start fitting it into your talk. So first off, you're going to look at structuring your talk, okay? So as you're doing it, always make sure and plan for, you know, first off, thank you for inviting me. It's, you know, I'm so happy that you guys invited me to come speak, so, you know, hopefully I'll have lots of good information to share with you. Always then do your own introduction, who you are, a little bit about your story, how you came to be and doing what it is you're doing. So go back to your original degree, when you graduated, or even how you started up. I always tell the story of how, you know, I grew up, thought I was going to be a vet, but I was going to be a cow vet, and I was going to make the farmers call the lady vet out when they couldn't figure things out, and then I realized that I didn't want to do surgery or memorize drugs, and I didn't really care about the innards, and I twisted my ankle, and went for physio and realized this is what I like. This is what I want to do. So telling that story and telling how I got to where I am, people find that fascinating. And I'm not saying people find my story fascinating. I'm saying people find other people's stories fascinating. So tell them yours. 'Cause there's a few things. One, it sets you up as a, here's why you should listen to me. Here's, you know, where I've come from. And two, it starts to build your relationship. It starts to make you relatable. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that afterwards. Okay. Your next slide should be, I'm already going to allude to the fact that we're going to talk about a PowerPoint is great, but hang on to that thought. So your next component should be what to expect. So here's what we're going to cover today. Okay, and then after that, you're going to go into it. And the same as you remember way back when you were taught how to write an essay, you're going to start with your introduction to whichever topic, and even if you're looking at multiple small topics, you do your introduction, then your body, what are the things that you want to cover, and your conclusion, either for the whole talk or for that component before you move on to the next component. And within that, so within your body, right, you want to include the information. So you did your homework, so you can give them some research and or tell them, here's what things are, you know, what is typically done, or here's what hip dysplasia looks like, or, whatever. It depends on what it is the talk you're doing, right? Or here's what I understand people are typically doing for warming up their canine athlete or whatever. Then you can go into, you know, some things like what you can do, right? You as in you, the practitioner. So here's some of the things that I would do, or some of the places I really like to look at, or treatments that I do, okay? Always then be sure to add, here's some things that you guys can do. These are safe things that you can do. Here's some stretches you can do, or here's some basic warm-up advice. you know what they always love? Here's some ways that you can assess your own dog, any of that kind of things. And then stories are great. Stories, case studies, anything like that. Because whenever you put in a story or a case study, right, you can, the audience goes from, okay, learning mode, into, oh, okay, entertain me for a little while. And it just, it's a nice way to change the dynamic within the class structure. And again, it's a nice way to start making yourself relatable and building a relationship with that audience. Okay, so that's just kind of your structuring of the talk. Okay, I've got some more about that in a minute. PowerPoint. Now, I would recommend doing a PowerPoint, and this is, part of this is me. So first off, I think it's nice to give them something to look at. So not just you and sitting up there and you lecturing and them watching you and all your quirks and foibles and weird facial expressions and whatever else. But I also find it's more comfortable for you, the presenter. So for me, I really like having a PowerPoint because I can have it up on the screen. It gives them something to look at. It could be, you know, even if it's something entertaining or a cartoon or you know, or the information so that they can actually, if they're listening and it's you know, technical stuff, it gives them something that they can actually write down. So I quite like that. I've heard some say, oh, don't use a PowerPoint because, you know, some people hide behind a PowerPoint. I admit, I kind of like hiding, not behind, but beside the PowerPoint so that it's a buffer. It's a tool, for their comfort and for my comfort. Now, when you are choosing your PowerPoints, pick something colorful because it's fun to look at, okay? And color affects emotion and all the rest, so pick a colorful PowerPoint background, okay? Use pictures so it's not just words, and I'm going to tell you what I shouldn't tell you, which is steal from the internet. So if you go onto the internet, you click, if you look at the kind of the top or the sidebar, upper right-hand corner, you can click images in through there, and then you can type in hip dysplasia, weave poles, or whatever it is you want to get a picture of. And then you right-click, and it says save or copy, and you can do that and put that into your PowerPoint. Now, full disclosure, if you are doing that, technically you should then cite where you sourced it from. So sourced from whatever website. But I will tell you, in all the ones I've seen, likely only 1 or 2% of your presenters or lecturers actually do that. So, you know, your other option is to use your own pictures, which is another, you know, important to then take pictures. And what's nice about your own pictures is it's likely pictures of dogs or before and afters or whatever, or even it's just a headshot that it reminds you and you can tell a story about a certain dog. So those are, that's always a nice one too. Let's see. Now, font. Let's talk about the writing. So a font for a PowerPoint, your minimum size should be 20, but 24 is actually easier to see. And then for a header, you would want, or your title component, at the title at the top of the slide where the words are, you want that to be 28, 30, or 32. And it just makes it easier to see. The larger that it's going to be projected on the screen, you can get away with smaller font. I would never go less than 18. 20 really should be your smallest. But if you're using just a small projector screen, you have to bear in mind that, you know, the smaller area that you're projecting to, the less that they can see and read from the back of the classroom. So keep your font size fairly large if you can. Okay. And with that, don't overcrowd your slide with words. So you can use as many slides as you want. Slides are free. to get your information across. So a slide that has some information on it and an interesting picture is going to be better than one slide that has all the stuff you have to say on that topic. And so just spread it out a little bit, because it just will make it easier. And like I said, then you can put a picture on there. That makes it more appealing anyways. When you are talking to your owners, use audience-appropriate language and explain the medical terms. So if you're like, okay, there really is no better way of saying nucleus pulposus, then say, you know, the nucleus pulposus isn't here, right? And then describe. Now, this is kind of like the gelatin-like substance that's right in the middle of the disc. So explain those medical terms, okay? Like I said, the owners love that. Because they're like, you know what, I've been looking online and it's so hard, because it's hard to differentiate. It's hard to, if you're not a medical person, it's hard to actually find information that is digestible for you, right? Okay, your timing. So when you are looking at, oh my gosh, how long is this presentation going to be? You can likely estimate that you will spend 30 to 60 seconds per slide. Okay, and some people say 60 seconds per slide as an average, in that some slides you might talk more, some slides you might talk less, but so I just break it down into 30 to 60. You could likely say 45 minutes then if you want, but 60 seems to be reasonable for estimating the length of your talk, or how long, or do you have enough material to cover a 1 hour talk? That's kind of your rule of thumb for that. Now, as far as things go, your first slide should be your title slide. It should have your name and your credentials on that, your clinic or your business, whichever that is, and your website. So give them a chance to write that down. And then your final slide, your final ending slide, should be something that's a thanks for listening, your clinic logo or an interesting picture, and again, your website. Because if they didn't write it down on the first slide, now by the end of it, they really think you're cool. So they're like, yeah, I am going to write down that website and look it up. Okay. I think that's all I have on creating your PowerPoints. Alrighty. Now let's get into the really important stuff. What to wear? What to wear? I always like to think that I want to do one level fancier than the audience, right? So casual, but not scrubs or blue jeans. Well, unless that's your style, kind of like Western fancy, where it's like Wranglers and a nice dress shirt, or you know, a blazer, whatever. But basically, try and one up it from what your audience is, and it just gives you that era of being a little bit more formal and being the guy at the front of the class, right? So it's like you set yourself up to be the expert. So think about that. Just think about that as you are choosing, well, what am I going to wear? Yeah, you're not going to wear a suit. You don't need to wear a suit. You don't need to, wear a ball gown. Duh. But anyways, but just try and think, you know, business casual, that sort of a look would be appropriate. Let's see. Your setup. So when you are setting up how you're going to set up your room, or where you sit, how you're going to be there, it's likely good to have you at the front of the room, quite close or next to the screen. And this will allow then for an audience to be looking at the screen of your PowerPoints and just kind of shift their head and look at you, or look at you at the same time as looking at the PowerPoint. Okay, and then in front of you have your laptop, so that you can read from your laptop, and you're facing the audience. I always like sitting a little bit higher as well, just so that I can make eye contact with everyone. If I am at the same level as the people sitting, then invariably you can't see anybody past that first row. So sit, I like a bar stool height. And in fact, I've got one that, so the talk I did to just last night, it wasn't at my facility, so I brought everything. I brought the projector. I brought my stool to sit on. I just happened on a whim to bring an extension cord, which is good because they didn't have one. I brought the screen. Anyways, but the whole point of this is I brought the bar stool that I could sit on. And I've just got, and actually we've got two because I found one in a secondhand store and I bought it as well. But just a foldable, collapsible bar stool so that I can sit a little bit higher. And it works great for lecturing that way, because then I am higher, I'm sitting, which is comfortable as compared to standing the whole time. I can get off of it easily if I want to walk around or do a demonstration. Anyways, and with that said, feel free to get up and move around, okay? Now, your voice. So I always say, I use my 4-H public speaking voice. I hope that wasn't too loud for you wherever you are. So the goal is, when I would teach the kids, I said, you want to lecture as if you're trying to speak to the guy at the back of the room. So we're not shouting. It's just that you are taking bigger breaths so that you can project your voice from the back of your throat. Okay, so if I'm talking like this, I'm not really speaking from the back of my throat. But if I'm backing away from the microphone right now, but if I am back here, I can then speak a little bit louder. I can project my voice more. When I take a deeper breath in, it allows me to be louder. So like that. Okay, now if you're like, oh my gosh, I can't do that. Oh, I feel so new. That's not me. Then buy a portable microphone. And I got one off of Amazon that we can use in my clinic for sometimes if we have to do lectures or if I'm teaching a course in the back and the underwater treadmill is going and it's noisy. So I bought this off of Amazon, and it's a microphone that is battery operated, and it's like a belt. So you wear the speaker around your waist, and it is connected to a headset with the microphone on it. And so basically my belly projects my voice. So it's a fabulous tool then if you need to, or you know you kind of have a smaller voice, or whatever, you've got a sore throat that day. It's a great thing to have. Alrighty, number 8 is make eye contact. Alrighty, so look around the room. Okay, as you are lecturing, make a point to the left side of the room, and then perhaps your next point, you're going to make that point to the right side of the room, okay, and make eye contact with the various people, and the different rows of people, the front row, the back row. And if you're feeling uncomfortable, it's always great to find that happy face. There's always going to be people in the audience who are happy faces, who are kind of smiling, who are nodding, who are just, they're like glued to you, just interested. Find them, because go back to those people more regularly, because it helps to bolster your feeling of confidence so that you are just more natural when you're lecturing. Okay? I always try to be that person in the audience as well now. I had this one guy, this physiotherapist who lectures on business, and he was doing a talk in Calgary. And afterwards we were talking, he says, you're a great person to have in the audience. And he says, no, you're a great audience participant. I said, thank you. I said, I'm actually very conscious of being a great audience participant. I said, because I lecture so much, I like to find those people who are happy, who are supportive, who are nodding their head that they understand. And I said, because that makes me a better lecturer. And I said to him, I said, so I really didn't want you to suck. I said, it was really self-serving. I wanted you to be good and feel confident and say all you had to say. So it was in my best interest that I be that happy person for you. Anyways, he did find that weird, but hey, that's not the first time that people have found me weird. Okay, 9. Oh, this works into being weird. Winning over your audience. So, your first thing first is smile at your audience, especially smile as you're starting and beginning. You know, if you, as you're going through things, have a smile on your face. Okay. Then be relatable. Alrighty. And what I say here is go ahead and tease yourself. So I am like right now, oh gosh, I need to, my eyes are so disappointing. In the last 2 years, they have totally started to go down. I'm using those readers from the drugstore anytime I have to read printed material. And now when I'm having to read my PowerPoints in front of everybody too. So it's makes me very sad. But I always, as I'm putting on my glasses, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've gotten old all of a sudden. I can't do anything without my glasses. So I tease myself with that, okay? I might tease myself that it's like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking about with this slide? You know, but feel free to be that way and say some of those things out loud because it makes you human. It makes you relatable, okay? Let's see, tell stories or a joke or make funny analogies. So I do, I like to tell stories, and I like to make funny analogies, right? So when I was talking to the Dashin Club, I was telling them, I said, your disc is kind of like, it's kind of like a wine gum, right? It's not a jelly bean. If you stepped on a jelly bean, it squashes out. You're like, whoa, that's a flat something. And if you step on a jujube, it like squishes out and it's flat too. But if you were to step on a wine gum, it has some staying power. I said, it holds its shape. You can still tell it's a wine gum. You might actually be able to read the flavor or the whatever, the pretend flavor on the wine gum after you stepped on it. That's more like a disc. It's a little bit tougher, but squishy. And with that, I mean, it's a weird, funny analogy, but they can visualize it. So that's kind of making a funny analogy, right? And when I talk about motor control and timing of the muscles, I always say, so now you know that Marilyn Monroe wasn't sexy when she walked like that. She just had weak glutes. Anyways, you've likely actually heard me say that. But it's one of those things where it just lightens up your talk a little bit, and people enjoy that reprieve. My dad was a big joke teller. I can't tell jokes because I don't remember jokes very well. But if that's something that you are good at, then go ahead, have a couple jokes that you pull out of your sleeve and tell during the talk. Okay, what else here? Ask your audience questions, okay? Engage them. It's like, okay, like what breeds of dogs do you have? Or like what sort of problems are you guys having with your dogs right now? Or has anybody tried acupuncture? Or, you know, engage them. Ask questions. Get them to participate with different things because it brings them into the fold. And it like I said, you're relatable. You're engaging with them. You're having a conversation. Okay. I always like to also allow questions, especially if I talk like to the dog owners, allow questions at any time during the talk. Okay. And it allows that natural back and forth to occur. And here's another trick is as the person is asking the question, smile. Now, not one of those toothy, you know, hi there smiles, but like a little half smile. So essentially look pleased while they're asking the question. Okay. And for whatever it's worth, I really do think it's one of those where it is an inviting facial gesture. Okay. Just that little smile, like, all right, like you're really interested to know what their question is. You're pleased. You're happy they're asking this question. Okay. Alrighty, so that's a bit about winning over your audience. 10, allow some time for question and answer. Allow some time for demonstration. In fact, it's great. So have them bring a dog or you bring a dog or whatever so that you can show them some of these things that they could be doing or how you do things, but more things that they can do, right? they love the demonstrations. They absolutely love the demonstrations. And the talk I gave just last night, it's like the question and answer. We must have had at least 30 minutes or 40 minutes of question and answer. We had at least half an hour of demos in addition to the hour-long talk that I gave. So, like I said, they love that. And then what I started doing, and maybe that's why lasted so long, I'd be like, okay, what else do you guys want to know? What else do you guys want to see? And they love that. I mean, then it just, because they were, okay. So anyways, that just is another way of, well, giving them what they want, winning over the audience, and just, if there's anything you forgot, it gives you more chances to bring up topics that they might want to know that are beneficial. Okay. And lastly, if you can, give them some handouts. Handouts, they love handouts. And then it's maybe something that they can write on as you're talking as well. And then it's also a good way that they will have your information in front of them. So even if they didn't write down your website when you had them, you know, you put that on your beginning slide and your end slide, now they have it because they have all those slides. But they love that. So do handouts. That's always appropriate. Okay. Whew. I think that is it. So hopefully this gives you some good, solid, concrete strategies and tactics and techniques that you can use to look at doing some public speaking and in a way of marketing or giving back to your dog community. So I hope that helps you, and until next time, cheers!